6. Today we have before Senate Bill 308, which is a Alaska Railroad Corporation revenue bond proposal. Mr. Gamble?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And excuse me for one second. We have with us Senator Terrio, Senator Cowdery, Senator Huggins, Senator French is en route, and Senator Kukesh is excused.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Pat Gamble. I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. And with me, I'd like to invite to the table Mr. Bill O'Leary, who is the Vice President of Finance and the CFO for Alaska Railroad. And we're here in accordance with the state railroad transfer statutes that require, in the event that we would like to use the bonding authority that we have, in order to do so, we must come to the legislature and get permission for that, and that is the purpose of Senate Bill 308 and accompanying House Bill 491, which we testified to yesterday.
And what is the status of the House bill?
The House bill is recommended to move. It will receive a hearing in finance as soon as scheduled. We have before you a short briefing, and I'll talk off of that briefing because it's a good leave behind, which really summarizes our position here and what we're doing and why we're doing it. These are revenue bonds. They're actually called capital grant receipt revenue bonds or notes. The aggregate that we're looking for that we'll explain to you is not to exceed $165 million. The next chart is entitled What at the top. We have since 1996 received earmarks consistently every year through 2006 from Senator Stevens through the FRA, monies that we have put specifically into the main line of the Alaska Railroad to make up for deferred maintenance that was deferred in the years between the rebuilding of the railroad after World War II in the 50s up through the 70s and 80s until the railroad was sold to the state. When the feds knew they were going to sell the railroad, they deferred a lot of capital improvements, and a lot of maintenance was deferred, and that accumulated. And the safety record of the railroad certainly wasn't good at the time of transfer because the main line failed in a number of ways that caused derailments, and we had a very high derailment rate in those days. And the accompanying dollar value of those derailments was as high in a particular year as $800,000 or $1 million back in the 80s. The derailments would run as high as 60 or 80 a year. This particular situation was recognized by Senator Stevens and Governor Sheffield as the president of the railroad in 1996, went to Washington and was successful in gaining entitlements for the Alaska Railroad on the FTA side, the passenger dollars that come to any railroad that carries passengers. But those weren't enough at the time, and so Senator Stevens started kicking in these earmarks. We probably put about $220 million into the main line of the railroad in rebuild and refurbishment since 1996. Essentially, what we're asking for today is, as a result of Safety Lou, in which the attributable miles for the Alaska Railroad were increased by a factor of about 6. And so the accompanying FTA dollars now that we are entitled to by law on a year-to-year basis in perpetuity increased from around $5 or $6 million a year to north of $30 million a year. And we can now project that out firmly into the future. What this does is it gives us a tool in the toolkit we haven't had before, and that's the ability to use a portion then of this expanded FTA dollars to pay off the debt service on bonding without neutering the rest of our capital program, because we're only going to use upwards of 50% to pay off the debt service, and accelerate the work that's been done since 1996 to finish off the refurbishment of the main line of the Alaska Railroad, principally between Anchorage and Fairbanks, because that's where the gross tonnage really occurs. If we are allowed to proceed and we complete this project, we will accelerate that completion by somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 10 years, depending on how our work schedule would have played out in the future. And instead of going in every year not knowing what we were going to get in terms of capital dollars and then reacting to it on short notice, and really not putting those dollars to work almost until the middle of the year when we finally get it through the grant process, we can actually front-load the dollars, do the bond issuances, and then have a stable, predictable work program year by year by year, all the way out into the future to completion, which is huge for us because we have not enjoyed that stability in the past, and we've sort of had to whipsaw depending on how much money we got each year. So in essence, in a nutshell, I mean, that's what this is all about. I've added a couple of charts. The next one's called derailments that shows you the progress that we have made based on the work that we've already done on the main line. You can see the impact that main line caused derailments, and that's essentially where the joints and the rails meet and go up and down when the wheels go across, and that transfer of energy right there is where the vulnerabilities are. The rail brakes, or the wheels actually, become worn and damaged through that interaction. And one of the features of this refurbishment is that the rail will be welded all the way from Anchorage to Fairbanks. There'll be no more click-clack, and there'll be no more of this. So you mitigate one of the key sources of derailments that the railroad has had for years and years right there.
Now, my assumption, the concrete ties are a big part of that. Is that true or false?
That's true, Mr. Chairman. Concrete ties will be a part of curves more than 6 degrees, because when you put that welded rail on there and you bank the curve, the forces on a curve are greater than the forces straight and level. And again, what you're trying to do is mitigate the effect of a heavy train's forces on the rail. On the curves, the concrete ties stabilize that curve in a way that wooden ties can't do because they flex. And this program includes concrete ties on all the curves greater than 6 degrees, which is a fairly gentle curve. The next chart just shows that.
Senator Cowdery has a question.
And Senator French has joined us at 10 minutes after the hour.
Also, the concrete ties over in Asia on the bullet trains and the high-speed trains, I assume yours is the same. It's kind of made in a S pattern, or are they straight ties?
No, they've got a little bit of a bow to them. I mean, if you look at them in profile, skylighted them like a windowsill, you'd see a little bit of a bow in the tie.
Over there, their ties had an S, and it kept this here motion out side by side of moving the wood ties, a straight tie, and that was for the high speed security of the alignment. That was what they
interesting used. The concrete tie manufacturing process is a patented process in the U.S. There's only two companies that do it, and the secret is in the rebar in the tie. The specs are actually quite difficult to meet. There's a machine that actually produces them, and it's a function of the transfer of those forces that you're talking about, that either the tie is made right, or if it's made wrong, those forces will transfer through the rebar to the concrete and actually break the tie up. So it's a very, very precise process, and one that we're interested in bringing to Alaska. And if we create enough demand in rail, for example, the line extension to Delta or something associated with a pipeline or whatever, we're right on the verge right now of being able to bring a manufacturing plant into Alaska for our purposes, and maybe even backhaul ties to the West Coast as a result. We've looked quite a bit into the concrete tie business, and for example, Anchorage Sand and Gravel is one company that's interested in expanding their operation to produce these ties.
As an aside, Charlie Huggins, the pipe for the pipeline. You know, we've heard several times about the weight of the pipe and the fact that you couldn't do it with road vehicles, trucks. My assumption is kind of a somewhat proposition for the railroad when it comes to hauling pipe. Is that accurate?
That's pretty much correct, Mr. Chairman. The best information we have right now, and the engineering detail is starting to come out, because the producers now, as we get closer to an agreement, their engineering folks are getting better detail on what's going to be required, and we're starting to get some of that feedback ourselves. The latest I got as of actually just a couple of days ago was they'll probably be 40-foot sticks now is what they're looking at, inch and an eighth, 52-inch pipe. And so we could put, depending on how you suspend them, and you don't just lay them one against the other, you actually pack them. Depending on how you pack them, we could probably put 4 to 6 on a flat car. That inch and an eighth pipe at 52 inches is about just a little less than 620 pounds a foot.
Thank you.
I had heard a couple of years ago, I read a report, and they were suggesting the 80-foot joints. Can the railroad handle 80-foot joints if that makes the decision?
Yes, Senator, we can. We would probably, again, depending on the packing, only be able to carry maybe two, at the most three, but probably two.
Well, I know the past, I think, hearings we've had, that we could give trucks a permit to over, you know, overweight permit, but many of the bridges wouldn't handle the weight. And that's why, it seemed to me, that's why I supported the railroad extension to Canada, you know, for that purpose.
Well, you know, our bridge program is, goes hand in hand with the line refurbishment. Now, the bridge program is a separate program, and we've got capital funds programmed to that. But this would certainly allow us to use some of this money for bridges if we need to. But we have a separate bridge program for that very reason. And for the last 5 years since I've been on the railroad, I mean, a stated goal of the Alaska Railroad is to be ready whenever the pipeline requires us. And again, another reason for accelerating this is we've still got work to do. But we feel that by the time the construction process would start, we will be well along to finishing what we're talking about here.
Let's proceed on it. We have 165 million reasons we need to do that.
Well, the next chart, as I said, the train accident rate, again, that's a beautiful trend line right there, and it shows that the main line is not being the source of train accidents as a result of broken up track and derailments. The next chart is called Project Information. It summarizes what the money will go for. There is an accompanying map that I think you have that starts out showing the work on an annual basis, year by year, exactly what kind of work and where it will occur on the Alaska Railroad line. One chart shows the annual work schedule. The accompanying line next to it shows the cumulative year by year until you get to the complete project. But it includes 355 miles of continuously welded rails, and the wooden ties that we do put into the line will be put in on a 35-year cycle, so that every year we'll be putting in the right number of ties to keep their age at 35 years and not any older. We won't have any more 50-year-old railroad ties on the Alaska Railroad. As I mentioned, the bridge program is still robust, and we are putting technology on the human error side along with this, so that between the physical safety mitigation that this program accelerates and the collision avoidance system on the technology side that we're also funding, it's not a part of this program in the long term. There's a little bit up front. But between the two, we'll probably have one of the safest railroads in the country. And collision avoidance basically uses GPS signals to tell each and every vehicle on the line what's in front of them, and will not let two vehicles come together, and will stop them. If it's a train, we'll actually shut the train down before it will let it come in too close to another vehicle on the line. We'll be probably the first operational railroad in the United States to have a full-up system working. Many, many others are trying it. It's the number one priority for railroads for the NTSB, and we think we'll probably be first with ours in about a year and a half. So overall,
Joe Gamble, let me ask you very quickly. You note 2006. You're anticipating all going smoothly, that you will get some work accomplished in 2006?
That's correct. Okay. Yes, we'll start working on this immediately if we get the approval. It's now, I will say one thing. The actual project work and the actual issuance of each of the bond issuances over several years, we won't take it all up in one issue. We'll issue some bonds, we'll do some work, then we'll issue bonds, do some work, and so on. Each of those will be approved by our board individually. We'll go back to our board, we'll get our board to approve the specific amount of money and the specific purchase of materials and the specific work that will go forward. So if you give us the overall authorization, we still have to satisfy our board at each step along the way.
Does this, if we give this authorization, is federal funds available, say, in 2010 or 2012, downstream? Is this sort of like a Garvey bond?
The difference between this and a Garvey bond, I hesitate to say yes, because Garvey bonds create bad news in some people's minds, in the sense that it's funded because of entitlements. It's the same sort of process. The difference, though, I think the best way to say the difference between this and a Garvey bond is the fact that we know exactly what we're going to get every year. It's not based on appropriations that you have to wait and see, and if they cut the appropriations, then you've locked up all your capital money in the Garvey bond. You know, we don't have that problem. We have actually modeled and flowed what percentage of our capital program, worst case, out over the years, we'll see, and it doesn't hit 50%. Because we know it's based on a formula, passenger track miles, and that formula escalates by a factor every single year, we can actually flow those dollars out and know exactly what we're going to get 12 years down the road. And it's an entitlement, so we'll get it.
Senatorial.
But as with all entitlements, still subject to appropriation somewhat. I mean, if we're running huge federal deficits, the Congress still can rein things in, and there would be an impact on this flow of funds, wouldn't there?
It is technically correct, and we went to Washington and we confirmed last week this particular issue. The answer we got is, you're in there, we're in there, with a number of other passenger railroads all across the country. They can't just take us out. They would have to take all the passenger roads out and change the formula. And that would be a huge legislative move across all the states in the United States to do that. And the likelihood of anybody doing that, they said, is very remote. However, these are 12-year bonds. And what we're doing is we're looking at one more cycle of authorization, not any more than that. So we're not going out 20 or 30 years with these bonds. We've looked at a couple of other railroads. There are several others who have done this already. We've looked at a couple and talked to them. We've talked to the Federal Transportation Administration about that likelihood, and they and we are very comfortable that we're on solid ground here.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Terrio makes a good point, and my question sort of springs from that. This is a totally safe investment, it looks like, for us to make. But the third bullet on your slide that we're working on now, or maybe it's the next page, says why now. You mentioned no undue risk to railroad or state. Is that the risk you're sort of referring to? Is there's some, you know, there's always some sort of legislative risk, so to speak?
No, the risk I'm referring to is that the full faith and credit of the Alaska Railroad and the state of Alaska are not backing these bonds.
Right, and then that's the no risk end of the spectrum. But you mentioned no undue risk, and so I guess I'm asking, what risk do you see?
See which chart you're on.
I'm on the slide that's titled Why Now?
Okay.
That particular line there, right there, it refers to the fact that the full faith and credit is not at risk. That's what that was supposed to be talking to.
Okay. So I'll put my question in a different way. What risk, if any, do you see in this project for my constituents or for the state in general?
It would be unfair for me to sit here and assure you that there was zero risk. However, the risk is really going to be taken by those who buy the bonds. I mean, that will set the interest rate. The market will set the interest rate based on their assessment of the risk. And it's our sort of predetermination that interest rate is going to be very favorable. These will be tax-free. So the sort of the peek under the tent that we've got is that the market is assessing this as a very low risk.
Fair enough. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On that same chart, why now? Because Safe TILU makes this possible, as I said. We can pre-stock materials at today's cost to a large degree. That's important, particularly the cost of steel. Safety demands nothing less. I mean, if we have an opportunity to get safer faster, we feel that we've got an obligation to pursue that, and that's what we're doing. And it's consistent with our number one priority starting back then in 1996. Next chart, the proposed financing numbers. We've kind of talked about this a little bit already. The following chart after that shows that I mentioned that at its worst, when you overlap these tranches of sales, the highest you get in our capital pot approaches right at 50% in 2014, and then as the debt retires, that number goes down, as you can see. So we still have a very robust capital program with over 50% of our capital dollars still at discretion to spend on other things. That's the summary of our presentation. I've included in the appendix on the next chart some other data that gets into a little bit more detail, and I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding these charts or any more detailed financial questions. Mr. O'Leary would be happy to go into those responses.
If I could, do you have a copy of the bill before you?
Thank you.
Yeah, the first thing I think for the record is if you would state as plainly as you could why we're doing this process. Why is the railroad coming to the state?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Why is the railroad, this process we're going through right now, why for the record, why are you coming to the state?
We're coming to the state because the state railroad transfer statute demands it, very specifically demands it.
Okay, good. Are there any questions on that? Okay, the next one, if you would go to page 2 of the legislation, and as I read through this, it didn't make sense to me. It may make perfect sense to you if you would explain it. On lines 6 through 9, this authorization is into bonds issued to refund the bonds authorized in this act on, just would you
go ahead, Bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. This language was put in at the behest of our bond counsel, is designed to permit us to refinance, for lack of a better term, the debt that would come about from issuing these bonds. So if there was a situation where interest rates were lower and we did want to refinance these bonds, this would permit us to do that within the authorization given by the legislature. And in the language on line, the second sentence starting on line 7, in that similar to refinancing a mortgage, you could actually raise the amount of the principal if it needed to be done because just cost of issuance that would still permit a debt service savings for us.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Senator French.
With the understanding being that you would overall save money because you're refinancing at a lower.
Absolutely.
Lower rate.
Only reason we would do something like that.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, that brings up a good point. This is a maximum number and not to exceed number. There are a couple of scenarios where we could easily end up not having to issue the total amount. For example, if we do get an FRA appropriation earmark or a couple of them, that would significantly impact the total that we would be needing to finish off the project.
And on your calendar of events, it appears that you have construction activity going through, at this point in time, 2012, that you projected here graphically. But you mentioned 2014. Was that your payoff time frame? You mentioned 2014.
Yeah, that was the chart. The debt service chart shows, no, it actually runs out to 2024.
Okay. Let's talk about the alternative. If we don't do this, what do we run into?
If we don't do this, we will take the same exact amount of money that we're talking about using for the debt service on a year-to-year basis. We will continue to put a portion of that money out there into the main line, and probably it's very difficult to project how much longer it will take, but on the order of seven, eight, as much as 10 additional years to get where we're going, purchasing the materials on a year-by-year basis at whatever the cost of materials would be at that particular time.
In the case of bad scenario default, what's the state's liability?
There, Mr. Chairman, there is no liability to the state, nor to the Alaska Railroad, either in that very clearly, both through this legislation and by our enabling statute, which requires us to put on the face of the bonds that these bonds are not obligations of the state of Alaska.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Campbell or Burroughs? General Gamble, you have anyone else here to testify?
No, Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Ready for a move? I move that we pass Senate Bill 308. I guess it's going to finance after this, the next committee, and then with individual recommendations, which is zero company fiscal.
Okay, sir. Objections? Okay. 308 will pass out of committee and on to finance, and this committee is adjourned.